is January. It is Wednesday, January the 8th, 2013. Time again for Afternoons with Amos, the talk show of record of our African-American community. I'm Amos Brown. Glad to have you here. And today marks starting our 10th season, 10th year, broadcasting live during a legislative session outside of the chambers of the Indiana House of Representatives. We started this back in late February, early March 2004, and when we came down to do it, no other radio broadcaster ever came down here and did a live two-hour show. Television would occasionally, they'd show you something live at 5, 6, 10, and 11, but they would never show you and let you hear the sights and sounds of the legislature. We're starting our 10th year doing it. The legislative session kind of really kicked off yesterday. It's kind of quiet, but this is a real critical session for the state of Indiana. We've got to pass a $20 to $25 billion budget over 2 years. We've got to deal with the issues of education, K through 12, higher education. Where do we get the money from? How do we reduce costs and get continue to have our kids have world-class education? What about all these education reforms that have occurred the last several years? What are we going to do about this? Do we need to pull back on some, improve, increase? There's also the new governor who takes office on Monday wants to cut your income taxes, but the lawmakers are saying, you know, Brother Pence, hold up a minute. We got some ways of money that we need to deal with, plus still an overriding issue, putting more Hoosiers back to work. The other reason that we started broadcasting from the legislature was to let all of you listening know that this is not a house for lobbyists wearing $500 shoes and $2,000 outfits and carrying like fancy $5,000 iPhones. This is a place where ordinary folks like you, can come and talk to your legislators. And just as I was going on, I saw two lovely ladies that were sitting, that were standing here in the hallway. They got shirts on that says, Keep Federal Retirees Here in Indiana. And I know a number of our listeners listening worked for the federal government throughout their careers, and you probably are federal retirees. And they were telling me, Callie Potts is here from beautiful New Albany, Indiana, and you were saying we're losing federal retirees to Kentucky. We don't want nobody to go to Kentucky.
Well, we're losing them because Kentucky exempts 41,000 from state income tax, and Indiana taxes everything that we make on our federal retirement.
So you're telling me that Indiana, that always wants to lower taxes on people and help Hoosiers out, our federal retirees, when they get not their Social Security check, but their federal retirement benefits, they've got to include that in that Indiana income tax?
Absolutely. Every bit of it.
Now, you belong to an organization, NARFE. What's that?
That is a National Active and Retired Federal Employee Organization. We're the only organization that protects the benefits of federal retirees.
And so now, does it, that right to work doesn't harm this or what they did? Like, this had nothing to do with union or right to work?
No, absolutely not.
What kind of response are you getting when you talk to the legislatures in knowing that maybe 40% of these people that are here representing, whether they're part of the Republican supermajority or the Democrats, 40% of them are new?
We're getting a mixed response. It's going to be expected. The ones that we've been able to talk to and educate and show them the inequities, because Social Security and railroad retirements are not taxed. So the ones that really understand that issue, they see the unfairness of what is happening now to our federal retirees.
Now, I know, as I said, I got a number of federal retirees. Now, this affects federal retirees who work for the federal government before what year?
About 1986.
So if people are listening that work for Uncle Sam, whether they worked at Denfos, whether they worked out at the old Fort Harrison, whether they worked at Naval Avionics, whether they worked at Crane, whether they worked for the post office, whether they worked for Social Security, whether they worked in the federal building, doesn't matter. This affects them. How would they get a hold of y'all?
There's local chapters of NARF in most cities. They can go on the Internet and go to www.narfe.org, and there's a link on there. They can find local chapters and get local information. They need to get involved in their local NARF chapters and get involved. Talk to their legislators and ask why they're paying taxes and their neighbor on Social Security is not.
So now, you know, we get a new governor next Monday. Y'all made an appointment to see him because he's talking about rolling back some of those income taxes. Maybe y'all can ride that train with him.
We would be happy to talk to Mr. Pence. We look forward to doing that, but we don't have an appointment as of yet.
But you're probably going to be sitting out of the inaugural next Monday in the cold, trying to say, you're waving aside, say, hey, we over here.
I wish.
How important is it, because I'm always trying to encourage our listeners, that this is the people's house. They can come down, make an appointment to see their legislator or wait for him or her to come out and kind of grab them in the hall and in a positive way, you know, give them reasons why they ought to vote a certain way or look at a particular issue. How important is it, I mean, for ordinary? I mean, you're not a politician. You're not an elected official. You're just an ordinary Hoosier.
That's right. It's very important. There's several of us down through here that are making appointments, talking to our representatives and senators today. We try to get them when they're back in their districts. We call them on the phone. We email.
Do they appreciate hearing from y'all?
Some of them do. Some of them don't.
and you'll meet them in the next election.
That's right.
Ms. Potts, Callie Potts, thank you very, very much for coming all the way up here from beautiful New Albany, Indiana, down here to the People's House.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
All right. See the thing, the different things you kind of learn here at the State House? That's kind of what it's all about. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's afternoon's name is earlier. This morning, members of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus held a news conference and a briefing. And what they were talking about were their priorities, the priorities that they feel are important for our community, for the 620,000 African-Americans across the state of Indiana, the importance issues that they feel need to be addressed in terms of some of the things that they talked about. And maybe you agree that these are issues that need to be brought up in front of the legislature. Maybe you think also there needs to be maybe some other issues that need to be brought to the forefront in this legislative session. This is your opportunity because we're going to be talking to some of the members of the General Assembly. We're over this year, starting our 10th year from the legislature. We're over on the Democratic side of the House. Even though Democrats are only 31 members out of the 100 members of the General Assembly, they still have some influence on the debate, and there are some critical issues like improving early childhood education, child care for pre-kindergarten education. There's still those kind of issues where Republicans, even with the supermajority, aren't going to be able to get many of their members to support that, and they're going to need Democratic votes if there's going to be any kind of attempt for mass transit and mass transit reform here in the Indianapolis area. That is going to require Democratic votes. There's probably a number of other things that are going to require Democratic votes. So Democrats still, even though they are outnumbered, they still play a role in this long legislative session. But some of the things that the African-American members of the Indiana General Assembly talked about earlier this morning, the chair, this year's chair of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus is State Senator Lonnie Randolph from up in northwest Indiana. He wants to look at ways of reducing gun violence here in Indiana, in the state of Indiana, not just in Indianapolis, but while respecting Second Amendment rights, seeing are there some ways that legislation can be tightened down to help to reduce gun violence. State Representative Charlie Brown from up in Gary, health and health care and health is one of his hot button issues. And he says that with the Affordable Care Act taking effect in another year, at the end of this particular year, that we need to make sure that law stays strong and to fight back any Republican attempts to weaken the health care law, and particularly not to provide insurance coverage to those that are uninsured. State Representative Cherish Pryor from here in Indianapolis and Marion County is introducing legislation where she wants to continue to recruit and retain minority students in higher education, and also wants to improve racial diversity on the staff of our colleges and universities here in the state, as well as our state universities contracting more with minority-owned businesses, particularly African-American-owned businesses. From up in Gary, State Senator Earlene Rogers says that early childhood education is a key. She's going to be one of the ones making a big push for passage of legislation in terms of improving early childhood education and the quality of early childhood education here in the state of Indiana. But she also wants a moratorium on other new education reforms. That's just some of the things. And, you know, if it sounds a little quiet here, it's because a year ago when we were down here, the men and women of organized labor were all over here because they were, you know, they were ramming down Hoosier's throat, right to work for less. Now it's the law, and mysteriously, I have not seen thousands and hundreds of thousands of new jobs coming over here. Sister Nancy, head of the AFL-CIO of Indiana, is here. Do you all expect a quiet year, or is the Republican supermajority, they got some other tricks up their sleeve?
Well, you know, it still remains to be seen. The bills are just trickling out. We've certainly heard some negative rumors, but what we're hoping for is a session where we can all focus on moving forward together as Hoosiers and creating the kind of jobs that people can afford to, you know, pay the rent, buy the groceries, and put the kids through school and maybe have just enough left over on Friday night to go out to movies and pizza, you know.
You're not surprised that these thousands of jobs have not, you know, rushed to Indiana because we're now a right-to-work state, and will they now all go to Michigan since Michigan's become a right-to-work state, and then we're going to end up with the short end of the stick again?
You know, we're not surprised. Nobody's ever been able to substantiate any job creation numbers from right-to-work, no matter where they passed it. What we have seen, actually, is a number of cases where Indiana workers, Indiana factories have gone in head-to-head competition with their neighbor states, and we've seen the jobs leave Indiana and go to non-right-to-work states since the passage of right-to-work. So we're losing good jobs that Hoosiers did have.
We're with Nancy Guyette, head of the AFL-CIO here in Indiana. What is one of the surprising things that have occurred is there are some conservative Republicans introducing legislation that Democrats may approve. State Senator Mike Delp, very conservative, wants a lot more transparency in how the state is recruiting jobs, the kind of jobs they get, what the impact is on the local community. Democrats have been saying that the Economic Development Commission is operating with smoke and mirrors. Is there something where there's a piece of legislation that could be common ground, where that could also be used to make sure that that some of these jobs actually go to the local communities where the factories and the facilities are, and that maybe some of them provide opportunities for union men and women, even under right to work?
Yeah, certainly we're encouraged by some of those things. We've long argued for transparency in our job numbers and our job recruitment efforts. It's very difficult for Hoosiers to judge something if they can't see it and see all the details in it. So we'll certainly be anxious to see some of that come to fruition.
Is there anything this year that organized labor is really worried about?
You know, we've heard some rumors, but we haven't seen anything introduced yet. So it remains to be seen. Certainly, some of the things on the Indiana Chamber's list of dreams are of concern to us, but they haven't been introduced yet. So we'll wait.
Does it seem? I mean, compared to a year ago, it's extraordinarily quiet, and everyone is on their best behavior. Is that maybe a backlash to a year ago, that the feeling is this is a long session, it deals with the budget, we have a new governor that takes office the beginning of next week, let's kind of feel each other out, let's try to stay as nice as we can for as long as we can?
You know, I certainly hope so. I mean, Hoosiers don't want the kind of divisiveness that we saw last year or the year before that. I think what they want is their representatives to really roll up their sleeves and start solving the problems that impact their daily lives.
Nancy Guyette, head of the AFL-CIO. Happy New Year to you. Good to be here. John Bartlett, state representative from the east side of Indianapolis. At the press conference, first of all, welcome. It is good to be here. And we're here on the D side of the house. And the brother over here, he's so happy. He hadn't seen us for 10 years. And he thought, wait, hold on. This is the hardworking doorkeeper on the D side. This is when you come on the D side, you see color at the beginning of the door. How long you been here?
About 7 years.
7 years. And you was lonely because you kept saying, why is Amos on the other side?
You never came over here with us. We felt discriminated against.
Well, guess what? We're here now.
And we're starting
the year off right.
Thank you.
What does the doorkeeper do?
Besides
keep Jim Shell out.
Well, that's what we do. We keep undesirable people from going in, disturbing the representatives so they can get their job done. Yeah, isn't that right?
All right, we go to Representative John Bartlett. He's given you a great introduction, Representative.
Yes. He's a great guy.
You guys had a press briefing. One of the things that you're talking about might seem a small issue to many, but if people's kids and grandkids ride a public school bus for a public school or a charter school in Indiana, a bill you're introducing is a big deal. What you trying to do?
Yes, I'm trying to get shoulder and lap seat belts on children as they ride the school buses. Amos, you're a grown man. If you sit down in your automobile and go for a drive, if the police catch you without a seat belt, you get a ticket. But if you put your six-year-old grandchild on a school bus, they do not have that option. And it's time in the great state of Indiana that we fix that.
Are there states that require school kids and on school buses to have seat belts?
I'm sure that they are, that we're pulling some information on that now. But there are some schools here, Heritage Christian being one, that since 2002 would not allow the kids to ride a school bus without seat belts. And we just need to be more diligent about that and make sure that we protect our children.
A lot of what members of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus talked about in your briefing are issues that really touch home. Are there other issues that people can come and bring to you that y'all would consider?
Certainly. Another issue, Amos, that we talked about this morning from the economic development side is there was a lot of predatory lending in the great state of Indiana. There were folk who lost homes in the great state of Indiana, and homes were sold on a short sale, which brought the value of the homes in that area down. So if you go to refinance your home, they tell you that you're upside down, and they don't want to do the refi. So we're looking at something, how we can bring the bankers in, because a lot of that's federal, but bring the bankers in so that if you will sign an agreement that you'll stay in your home for the next 5 to 10 years, then they would do the refi no matter whether or not you were upside down.
I was talking to Nancy Guyette, obviously a year ago. The atmosphere here in January in the legislature was probably worse than WWE wrestling. This is starting out much more peaceful. How long do you think? Is this just like the calm until the new governor comes in? Or can this at least positive feeling last for a while?
Let's hope that the positive feeling lasts for a while. As a matter of fact, throughout the session, I think that we're all here as legislators, and we're here to do what is good and what is right for the citizens of the great state of Indiana. Often we get caught up in Democrat, Republican, but I don't think the citizens really care whether or not you're a Democrat or a Republican. They want you to come down and do the business of the people.
Speaking of that, 239-1310, 239-1310 is afternoon's names. Let me go to the phones. Let me move up here and see. We got Linda. Let's start today with Linda. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Amos. Happy New Year's to you.
Happy New Year.
I wanted to call you about the prior caller, the lady who was on about the people who had retired from a government job. And
yes.
I was in the car and I didn't get her email that you could call for, to talk to her.
You know, I'm going to find that information out and write that down because I was too busy concentrating on holding the microphone. And it's hard to write and hold a microphone when you're standing
okay.
up at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But let me bring this out to John Bartlett. I don't know whether you saw these federal retirees that have been here lobbying from all over the state today talking about an issue where if you're a federal retiree and you work for the federal government before 1986, your retirement income is taxable here in the state of Indiana, and there's a lot of African-American federal retirees, and they're out here lobbying folks. Have any of those folks talked to you all?
They have not. I've received some information, some written information about that fact, and it's something we're taking a look at and how we can help them. Actually, I'm really more concerned about our military. I don't think our military get a fair shake, and I'm certainly concerned with how we treat them when they come home, those who are injured and those who are not injured. and those who have served our country well and receive a retirement, and we need to protect them as much as we possibly can.
On that note, are you concerned about with the attitude of the governor-elect that he wants to kind of upgrade the Office of Veterans Affairs in his administration and how we treat our veterans?
I think that's an excellent idea, Amos, and I would support that 100%.
All right, speaking of that, here's one of these rookies that's here. Welcome. You got your pin on. Does that make you an official representative?
I sure hope so. I've been sworn in, so I feel like an imposter sometime.
With State Representative Christina Hale, first of all, congratulations. So how's it feel now on day three?
I feel like I have a lot to learn, but it's good to get my feet on the ground and get started. So,
what kinds of things, have you introduced any legislation? What kinds of things will you be working on in this legislative session?
Well, I knocked on a lot of doors during the campaign, so I'm focusing on a cash for gold bill, better regulating cash for gold stores in our district. On the northeast side of Indy, we have a lot of home invasion, and homeowners have had problems investigating crimes and break-ins. I'm also looking at the compulsory education age and lowering that from age 7 to age 5 here in Indiana.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because we're going to be talking to Superintendent Dr. Eugene White tomorrow. IPS has this proposal to provide full-day pre-K for 4-year-olds. And one of the things I'm going to ask him is, wait a minute, if you're doing this for 4-year-olds, but you don't have to be 7 to go into kindergarten, that sounds like a 2 or 3 year gap.
It does, and what's strange is that we know at least until kids are 8, they're learning to read, and after 8, they need to read to learn. And the younger we can start, the better. Very interestingly, most of our competing nations around the world, for example, the United Kingdom, start full-day kindergarten at age 4. So we're really behind the curve and need to get caught up.
State Representative Christina Hale, and there's no rookie stripes y'all have, like the race car drivers, no?
Well, I have some good mentors here, like Representative Bartlett, so he takes good care of me.
Plus, there are, I mentioned, like 40% of the legislators here are new in the last 2 years. That's a lot of rookies.
Yes, it is, but we bring them in, and here comes another one right now. And we try to make them comfortable, Amos, and do what we can to help them get their feet on the ground.
With one of the other rookies, State Representative Carly Maser, congratulations, first of all. Day 3, are you settled yet?
I'm not settled yet, but I'm always settling, Amos. No, I am so excited about what I'm doing, but I'm working on settling.
So what are going to be your priorities that you're going to try to maneuver through this legislature?
Sure. I'm going to do what I can to help out the veterans, of course. Very passionate about that. See what we can do about senior hair. And certainly overall, just working on everything that we can do to help the jobs and economy on the west side of Indianapolis.
What about, we keep hearing that quality preschool, is going to be a major issue that's being pushed by the Speaker Bosma, but he admitted he's going to need Democratic votes to get that done. If that's the case, that means that's an opportunity to say, you want my support? Well, what you going to do for me?
Sure. Well, I can tell you, Amos, I've been on your show before, and I'm very passionate about public education. I'm a student. I'm here to learn, and I'm always willing to listen. As far as my agenda with education, I can tell you I'm passionate about public education.
All right. State Representative Carly Maser, I'm going to let you all. Y'all aren't going to start. Y'all never start on time.
Well, we need to be there on time so that they don't do anything and we don't know.
There you go. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's afternoon's name. So let me go back to the phones. Brenda has been waiting patiently. Hi, Brenda. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Amos, and hello to your panel there.
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions. Maybe you can answer them all in order that they come. The first question is, would you support a moratorium on special education placement of black boys? Because many of the school psychologists are white, and they make the decisions about how our boys are labeled. That's one. Would you request for an audit of special education dollars that come into the state? 3, compensatory education for those children who are denied educational services from day one, meaning special needs children. 4, request for a federal investigation as to how the money comes into the state of Indiana, because Indiana has a bounty system for special education. How that is that the more kids they can shove into special education, it's kind of a dumping ground. Okay, would you support an ombudsman to serve parents of children with special needs? Number six, would you support criminal prosecution of education child abuse by educators? These are some real issues that our parents are facing, particularly black parents, children of special needs, low-income parents. Our system is in crisis. And
all
we
right.
are tired of our system being painted as a gold mine where they're leaving behind too many of our children. So where do you all stand on these questions?
Well, I tell you what, they have rushed in just as I was taking your call to be there for the quorum call. I've made notes on this, and I'm going to press them when they come out, okay?
Keep in the questions, Amos, because I'm going to hold you to it.
Okay, that's not a problem, my sister. I appreciate it. 239-1310, 239-1310 is Afternoons with Amos. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more of your calls, talking more with legislators, lobbyists, folks that are just down here trying to redress their grievance. It is the Indiana General Assembly. It is day three of the session that runs until now, till the end of April, which is a long time because they got to do a budget that lasts 2 years, a multi-billion dollar budget that covers everything from state parks to the education of our children from kindergarten all the way up until they graduate from college. It's a special edition of Afternoons with Amos. We're live at the legislature after these. All right, welcome back. And that is what you think precipitated what happened over the weekend.
I just felt that he was let down. I think he was let down. So... you know, he wasn't out to hurt anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't his plan to out to hurt no one. You know, what happened there, I don't know, but I know that as far as all this could have been prevented if they would have sent my child into a program, put him in, he was asking for help.
And I don't doubt that.
Now they want to help me. You know, I'm here with you, I want to do this. I'll end this meeting to come to see your needs now. When I'm asking you for help way before then.
Is he still locked up, or has he been released?
Yes, he is.
Has he been assigned a public defender?
They trying to get him a public defender now. So,
okay.
You know, Amos Brown, I talked to you once before. I came over and talked to you about another son of mine that's been accused of something that he didn't do. You know, I don't know, you know. And you told me all they had to do was take a picture of the computer. Remember me?
At this second, I don't, but that's not any kind of disrespect.
Yeah, well. Yeah, I come to your office.
I don't doubt that.
I just wish that they had more programs when the kids come out of these places, that they have a good program set up for them to go to get rehabilitated, and just instead of just leaving them. And I know counselors try, you know, they got to overload, you know, with kids, you know. But, you know, some of these churches is trying to let kids come in and do programs, and that's good, you know. And I just wish one my kid would have got into that program, because I've heard about Barnes, that there was a good program to get in.
And this program was, the program was at Daymar or at Barnes United Methodist?
No, Daymar was just his cross care, and they just signed him to, like, a counselor just come out and talk to you, do a home visit, and that was it. This child needed more attention.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's ADHD. He has ADHD, ODD, OCD. You know, he's on his medication.
Right.
And he eased off of that, too. So, you know, I'm just, my son asked for help. He asked him for help.
Two suggestions that I would make to you. One, when you talk to his public defender,
yes,
you need to outline all of those things where he tried
I went to court yesterday.
Right.
You know, I'm right down the street. I just was going to go see him now, and I'm right down the street sitting in the parking lot. You know, and I talked to the judge yesterday, and I told him just that he asked for help. You know, You know, I over again, I tell my kids, you know, Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior.
Right.
And that's who you have to give all your problems to, because you can't go out here and idle anything else or anyone else, you know. I'm glad that they do need to put curfew on these kids in the malls, mm-hmm. and they need more security in malls and schools. It's just a lot of things that's, you know,
I don't disagree with all that. The one thing I would say to you is, if to the best of your memory, if you can remember dates and times and even names of people you and your son talked to at Damar and these other agencies, the probation.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Yes.
Write it all down.
Yes.
Write down the dates and the times and the what have you. That will help his attorney, his public defender. In making the case of, hey, he reached out, he did this, he did that.
That's right.
You know, okay, you'll start documenting all of that, okay?
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, good luck to you.
Bye-bye.
239-1310. Let me go back to the phones and another anonymous. Hi there.
Yeah, I almost wrecked my car and pulled over listening to that lady talk. I don't mean to be insensitive, but what if that child had killed somebody else's good child at the mall with the shooters? Where was she when they was coming up? It seemed like she was just absent from day of birth when she had him. Now
well,
out and she's crying that they didn't get no help. He needs to be put under the jail.
Well, but
another one in jail.
Hold on. I hear you, but I think you may have misheard what she was talking about. What she was talking about, and I understand exactly where you're coming from, but I think what she was saying was he had been referred to participate in some programs and some therapies that would have helped prevent what happened, and he kept kind of reaching out and saying, I need help. Can you help me? And agencies that should have been available to help him were not. That's not to talk about what may have happened in the home from day one. You hear what I'm saying? I hear what you're saying completely.
I hear what you're saying, Amos. But I'm saying sometimes when your child do something that egregious, you will come up with every kind of excuse to make the light not shine where it should shine. Now, mm-hmm. I'm not saying that didn't happen at Damar. I'm not saying that. But
right.
I've seen mass murderers. Even Jeffrey Dahmer's father said he didn't do it. He said he wasn't crazy. But see, right. This is what I'm saying. That boy was at the mall, shouldn't have been out there and shooting guns. He should have been at home. And where was she when he was out there? She couldn't tell you right now. It's time out. Sitting up talking and begging everybody else now to help your child when you should have helped him at birth, baby, all the way from there to now.
But hold on. But hold on. Until the mall managers and the mall owners decide that they need to put a curfew in their own malls, the way 70 to 80 malls across the country have, you can be 17 years old out in a mall at 7 o'clock in the evening. That's legal.
Okay, Amy.
Because curfew is not till 11 o'clock.
So who had the gun? She wouldn't even say if he was the shooter or nothing. She just said he was with him. At first she said he was the shooter. Now that's what I heard before I pulled over.
That's what I heard too.
Now was he at home with a gun? Does she know that?
Well, let me put it this way. I didn't ask the question because that would be incriminating, and that's a whole nother kettle of fish. But, you know, you raised some good points, but I also wanted to point out some other things that I appreciated. Let me go to another anonymous, then we'll take a break at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air. What's up?
Hi, I'm calling because I have a situation with my light bill. And I have lupus, and I have two kids, and I'm here in the cold with, you know, no heat or anything. because the light company keeps messing up with my account. So now they want $833 to turn my lights back on, which I don't have. I just passed my board. You know.
Well, wait a minute. Hold on a minute. So you did not apply for energy assistance?
They're so backed up and everything.
And how many months are at $800? How many months behind are you?
No, they keep tacking on these different fees. I got sick in October, so the job that I had full time wouldn't put me back on the schedule once the doctor released me. So I was out of work for a little over a month, and then I had to find another job. I'm just now starting another job, but I only work Saturday and Sunday, 8 hours, which is 16 hours.
Right.
I had a new job I was supposed to start today, but with no lights, and so I couldn't start it because I've been in the same clothes for 3 days. I can't bathe. I can't do anything.
And have you set up an appointment with Energy Assistance?
I haven't called them because when I tried to call them, they were backed up for months.
Well, no, they're backed up, but you got to get in the system. You, just because they say they're backed up, you still got to, you know, make the application.
Right, but I mean, I've got to have license. I'm like, now I have lupus. I got a kid here that, you know, has hearing loss in both ears. My mom is here with brain cancer.
Have you called the helpline 211?
No, because they sent me to the trustee's office, and the trustee won't do anything.
I tell you what I want to do, because I need to talk to the leader here of all the Democrats. Hold on, and we'll see if we can't figure something out, okay?
Okay.
239-1310, 239-1310. You're out rushing. You're not in there, but you're out rushing. Scott Pilaf, good to see you.
Nice to see you, Amos.
We told you we were coming.
I know, and you're exactly where you said you'd be, and it's terrific. And I like the side of the house you're on, too.
The doorkeeper's so happy because he thought we were neglecting him over these years.
I tell you what. These guys keep us safe in here. We got two of the best doorkeepers you could ever have, and they've been with us for a long time.
Scott Pilaf is the leader of the Democrats in the House of Representatives. Everyone is so nice right now compared to a year ago. How long does this feeling last? Is this just like the first week of school?
It's like the first week of school. And this is the point of session where it's sort of like everyone coming back to you nailed it. Everyone getting back, getting reacquainted, renewing friendships and relationships, talking about issues. But those of us who have been around know the hard part is yet to come, and there's inevitably some frustrating days ahead, and that's part of the process.
There are some things, particularly Speaker Bosma wants to move on quality preschool education, for increasing the number of working class and poor families that can get that. He's acknowledged he doesn't have the votes to get that done. He's got to come knock on the door of Democrats. Does that give Democrats some leverage? Because everybody wants better preschool for our kids.
Well, that's right. We're going to find some areas of bipartisanship that are going to be worthwhile for Indiana. That's why sometimes these personal relationships are important, because when there are the opportunities to compromise, you have to be able to get along to the extent where you can work together on something that people care about. There's going to be many opportunities for House Democrats to have an impact here on public policy. We're going to be vocal. We're going to provide alternatives. We are going to critique when that's important, but certainly we're going to help when it's for the good of the state.
You talked about a moratorium on social issues. There's also a feeling that we, while respecting the Second Amendment, while respecting the right of people to bear arms legally and legitimately, there's some crazy stuff going on, allowing college kids to carry weapons, which is weird in itself. How important is it going to be to hold back some of this craziness in terms of allowing more weapons out there instead of sensible weapons?
Well, as I appealed to Speaker Bosma and the House Majority yesterday, they have to exercise restraint. Just because you have the votes and you have the power doesn't mean you do everything you dreamed of doing. And we have very serious economic problems here in Indiana, and we can't let divisiveness prevent us from doing what is going to make people's everyday lives better.
Two final things, Leader Pilaf. One of the things that has come up on the Republican side, particularly in the state Senate, wanting to support things that Glenda Ritz supporters were supporting, holding off on Common Core education, maybe not do some of this school reform, is there a desire in the Democratic caucus that it's time to take a moratorium on some of the school reform? Let's absorb what's happened. Let's not try any new experiments for a while.
Well, you said it better probably than I'm going to say it. But that's another thing we called for yesterday. You have to fix the Tony Bennett mistakes. They rushed so quickly into these science experiments involving our kids that they got a lot of things wrong. They need to fix those mistakes, and also the message was sent in the election. The people want the traditional public schools reinforced, and we're going to be calling upon them to do that. They've had their time to gamble with the House education money and some of these things that they've dreamed about doing, but now it's time to get back to the basics. People want safe schools where struggling kids get a little extra help.
All right, Leader Peeloff, thanks very much for being with us. We'll take a break, and they're sneaking out. They've taken the quorum. And we'll talk to some of our elected representatives. We got Vanessa Summers. We got Brother Forrestall in the House, one of the rookies. Where's your, you got to have a pin on. They were confused.
I just got one from Representative Charlie Brown this morning, actually, and I just haven't put it on yet.
See, I didn't want the doorkeeper to not let you in or anything like that. It's After This with Amos. We're live for the legislature after these. All right, we've got a caucus going on here at the legislature. It's amazing. The legislature went in session at 1:30, and people just came out of nowhere, including members of the legislature, State Representative Vanessa Summers in the House. I understand at the press conference today you kind of got on DCS, but I think most of the legislature has been getting on the Department of Child Services because they need to improve. What do you want them to do?
Well, what I mainly want them to do is to get rid of the centralized hotline, which all the calls come through Indianapolis, and people are not getting serviced, especially the people that are on the front lines, like the police officers, the judges, social workers, and the hospital workers. Everybody has to call one central hotline. So there's a couple of things going on. One is that everybody gets their own hotline back in their own counties. And this, another thing is that the judges and the social workers and the people, prosecutors, have their own special number. So those are the two things that we're going to be working on, the few of things that we're going to be working on in DCS.
The new governor has named virtually every member of his new administration, nearly all the state agencies except three, Economic Development, FSSA, and the Department of Child Services. Seems like he's saving the most difficult ones for last.
I really wish he would just give Mr. Ryan the deputy position because he's very knowledgeable about the situation in DCS, and he's a nice person to work with.
Oh, that word may get back to him. You never know.
Yeah, he's a nice person to work with.
Now, you have been the chair of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus, and you turned the gavel. Is it really a gavel, or you just have like a
gavel?
Ain't no gavel. You turned it over to State Senator Lonnie Randolph, the pride of Northwest Indiana. And you held a first of all, welcome, Senator. You guys held a press conference this morning. Yes. What's the priority of the Black Legislative Caucus?
Our number one priority is to look out for the best interests of minorities and underprivileged people in terms of jobs, education, health care, and then also take advantage of any kind of economic development tool through legislation we hope to try to provide for them.
Have you been able to talk to the governor-elect and establish any kind of rapport with him?
Yeah, I've spoke with him on the phone. We've spoke about a couple weeks ago. So we've agreed to meet after the session starts, after he gets the inauguration, he gets sworn in. We've agreed to meet and talk further about our concerns and his concerns and see how we can work together in conjunction with the common interest and everything.
Is it a concern that unlike the current governor, Mitch Daniels, who spent a lot of time campaigning in Lake County and a lot of time visiting Lake County in Northwest Indiana during his 8 years, Mike Pence rarely was up there. Is that a concern for you guys?
It was a concern, and it was a concern that brought about a lot of discussions, and I don't know why, but after talking to him directly, the initial phone contact was made by him. He contacted me first. That was a good sign. And then thereafter, I contacted him. We had a conversation, and the conversation was very cordial. So it sounds like he's really interested in terms of what our concerns are and working with us. Now, that direct kind of communication contact did not necessarily come consistently from Governor Daniels, even though Daniels spent a lot of time in Lake County. But this, Daniels never called me personally on the phone to talk to me, whereas Pence did. So that says a lot.
How important is it? We call our community down here USIN, So how important is it for usins to be down here in this legislature during the session talking to you guys?
Very important, because how will we know what concerns and interests that you have to push and support if we don't talk to you, if you're not here to let us know what's going on? We only know so much. We can only be in so many places throughout the state. We can't be in everywhere. So in our respective districts, we're concerned about their concerns and their problems, but we're not concerned, but we're not aware of the other districts that we don't have a communication with. So it's very important that you be down here to let us know what's happening in your area so we know we've incorporated that term, what our agenda is going to be.
State Senator Lonnie Randolph, he's one of the veterans here in the legislature. Robin Shackelford is one of the many newbies down here. Robin, congratulations. What are your priorities in this legislature?
My priorities is mainly going to be economic development and public health. I do have a bill that I'm authoring. It's for MBEs and WBEs reporting. I think we've seen a lot of issues where we want to see if the state government or local governments are actually doing business with MBEs. We haven't been able to gain that data on actual expenditures. So this bill will require any local entity, any state office that's actually doing business with an MBE or WBE, they have to submit those annual expenditures to the state Minority and Business Division office, and then they will annually post a report that's due to the governor, the legislators, and the public, and has to be put on the website.
Robin, I got to ask you, does the bill have a number?
Right now, it doesn't have a number. It's still being drafted, but I'll get it to you as soon as possible.
People was already calling and said, what's that Robin Shackelford doing?
That's great. Well, all three of my bills, they actually aren't complete yet. They're going through fiscal, and as soon as I get bill numbers on them, I'll get them to you guys.
So the committee would be the Ways and Means?
That would probably go to Commerce, Small Business, and Economic Development, and I sit on that committee.
So, you know, everybody's feeling good. It's the first week of school, so to speak. How you feeling?
Oh, I'm feeling great. I'm excited about a couple of other my bills that's going to help ex-felons, and it'll help small.
What was the bill that would help ex-felons?
It's for small businesses and large businesses. They will get a tax credit if they hire an ex-felon. So they will get a $3,000 tax credit against their state liability tax if they hire an ex-felon. Because when I was out canvassing, and I know you hear a lot of people saying they can't get jobs because of their record, so this will incentivize those employers to hire those ex-felons. And then I have another bill that will assist with the employment of ex-felons, where it will help with that insurance bond. So if the company needs to get insurance for those ex-felons, the state will pick up the second 6 months of paying for that insurance. And there's already a federal program that picks up the first 6 months.
All right, Robin Shackelford's one of the rookies. So is Justin Moed. Is another one of the rookies down there. And you've been out because you introduced some proposals this week to try to help revitalize our older neighborhoods.
Yes, Amos. I represent downtown Indianapolis, the near south side and west side of the city, and some of the major issues I found while going out knocking on doors was the abandoned housing crisis we have in our neighborhoods, trying to get abandoned homes fixed back up, people living in them, reducing crime that way, addressing the theft of catalytic converters and HVAC coils from people's cars and air conditioning units. So trying to address some of those things that people care about day-to-day in their neighborhoods that, you know, I think that are nonpartisan, non-political, that we should be able to work together very easily to get these things done.
What kind of, what's your feeling? You know, it's day three down here. Everybody's on their best behavior, but you know, it's gonna get contentious. I was about to say nasty, but I'll be positive today. Contentious. You ready for that?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, someone threw out a number that 60% of all the members of the House have only got 4 years of experience or less, and I think that there are a lot of us new people, new faces with new ideas, and that want to kind of handle things in a different way. And we've all talked about grabbing coffee and lunch and dinner together to try and start breaking down some of those partisan divides. Because I think that while there are always those contentious issues, there are a vast number of issues out there that aren't, that we can work together on, and I think that we can do that.
We're also here with Brother Forrestall.
All right, how are you?
And Forrestall, one of the new state representatives. I got to ask you, one of the hot-button issues is preschool, pre-K. IPS wants to make it full day for four-year-olds, but still nobody's changing the age limit for kindergarten, so you get educated at four and then be twiddling your thumbs for 2 or 3 years. Doing all of this, we got to have a sensible solution to quality preschool?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the probably most important things, if not the most important thing that we do as a community, is making sure that our children have access to a world-class education, and that includes, you know, preschool education. I think studies show that the more schooling and the earlier that a child begins receiving a, you know, formal education, the better they're going to do long term, and that's good for everybody.
What are your priorities? What bills are you writing in longhand on legal pad to introduce in this session?
Sure. Well, I represent District 100, which is the city's near east side, near south side, and we have an issue with abandoned housing. So that's one of the things that I'm really trying to tackle. I've got some bills that I'm working on now that would help encourage people to take over some of those abandoned homes and, you know, take them off the rolls of the city and start to rehabilitate those properties. I also have some landlord responsibility, you know, bills that are going around, and also an energy bill that would help homeowners save money on their energy bills. And I think all of those are going to be really important.
The other thing, one of the other issues is the number of people who need energy assistance is greater than the funds available. I mean, we have a lady on hold that's sitting there with an $800 light bill. Her lights have been turned off. She, you know, has been reluctant to go to energy assistance because the waiting list is longer than the waiting list to get in a Disneyland ride. As we look at how to deal with this surplus, the governor wants some of the surplus given back to taxpayers. Members of the legislature on both parties are looking at trying to recoup cuts that have been made. Do we also need to look at investments for Hoosiers that are hurting? Because I know in your district, you got a lot of folks that are probably sitting in the dark or sitting without heat because they've been without.
Yes. Yeah, and, you know, actually that's something I would say that I worry about every day when I wake up in the morning, that we are too good of a state, and Hoosiers are, you know, caring and compassionate, and to think about people going without heat in the winter, it doesn't sit well with anybody, and it's not something that we should allow to happen. Now, that's, you know, not to say that everybody should have, you know, everything paid for. That's not what we're saying at all. But, you know, a basic minimum assistance to people who are really hurting in difficult times is important, and it's something that we should make a priority at the State House.
One of the things that I hear from listeners, and this goes back to the issue of abandoned houses, is people say, gee, you know, young people complain that there's nothing for them to do. We may not have as many community centers as we used to have back in the day. Why can't we use some of these abandoned houses, abandoned buildings to do that? In the legislation you're looking at, is there a way that some of those uses could be not just for somebody trying to get a property and either use it for themselves, for their own residence, or try to upgrade it and then flip it for profit, which is all fair in love and property, but also something that could provide a community need?
Yes, that's absolutely right. And one of the things that one of my abandoned housing bills addresses is exactly that point. Right now we have a system that is very strict, you know, on how we lend money and, you know, so that it's only for owner-occupied homes. And what the problem is so big and so complex that I wanted to bring more people to the table. So that includes, you know, some low-interest small business loans, allowing people to sell the houses when they're done at a profit. And we're looking at all matters of wording on the bill issues. But the important thing at the end of the day is to take these blighted homes that are falling down and turn them into a home for a family to live in, so that, you know, people's property values aren't sinking because there's a boarded up home with broken out windows, you know, next door.
Is there another way to speed up the process of a absentee landlord losing the property? I know we want to respect property rights in Indiana, but somebody that's just dragging their feet that lives in Florida or West Covina shouldn't be allowed to deteriorate a neighborhood.
Absolutely, and that's actually a another piece of legislation that actually myself and I know Representative Justin Moed are working on, addresses that very issue. It's people who are not invested in the neighborhoods. You know, if they live out of state or live in another area, but they own 15 properties and they allow them all to deteriorate, how do we get those back? How do we take that out of their hand and put it in, you know, make it so that people who are invested in the neighborhood and care, you know, have that. So those are all things that we are definitely looking at to try to get this abandoned housing issue under control.
State Representative Dan Forrestal, thank you very, very much. 239-1310, 239-1310 is Afternoon's Davis. I'm going to kind of move over here before we take a break. Greg Porter is being lobbied. You know, this is what happens when you're down here in the legislature. they see folks, and they're doing everything. Tomorrow, Dr. Eugene White, the head of IPS, will be talking to him about his plan for a full-day preschool for four-year-olds. So, Greg Porter, you're now the point person for the Democrats on Ways and Means, writing the budget, which means it's not going to get done until the end of April, which is when the budget usually gets done. When will the budget writing process begin? Not until you get some word from the governor of what he's doing, or is this going to start within the next week or so?
No, right, Amos. The governor is supposed to propose his budget on this Thursday around 2 o'clock. The budget committee will be accepting some type of budget.
He's going to show you something before he takes the oath?
According to the statute, in order for us to keep within the law, there has to be something presented to us by statute by this Thursday at 2 o'clock. So
who does that? Is that going to be Mitch's or is that Mike's? Nobody knows.
No one knows at this point. I just know by statute, Amos, we're going to have that presented to the budget committee, sincerely.
Let me ask a question. One of the things legislatures do is have study committees where you take a very serious issue. And members of the House and the Senate and Democrats and Republicans get together and take testimony under oath and study an issue. Have we ever had a study committee on special education in this state?
No. I've been around for 20 years. We have addressed some special education initiatives, but we haven't had one specifically for special education.
Have we reached a point, given the amount of federal money that comes in to special education in the state, A. B, given the questions that have been raised in the traditional public schools about disproportionality, particularly with African-American males in large urban districts. Three, the questions it raised of whether charter schools are even following their statutory mandates for special education. Given all of the complaints that not just here in Marion County, I'm sure that have been in Lake County and other places, are we at a point where it is time for a serious study committee that looks at the totality of special education in Indiana?
I would say yes for those three initiatives that you just said. When I say however, it means that we have to get everyone to say we want to study this commission. So that goes in front of the four caucuses, the legislative caucus, and we have to ask them, or we do a resolution to say that thou shalt, we will ask for us to study that over the summer. And that is something that I don't think, Amos, would take a summer. I think it would take a longer than a summer to do that. Because I think at this point, when we talk about special education coming to our state for those dollars and what is not being funded for individual education initiatives, special ed at the federal level, we're probably running about $90 billion behind on what really should be out there right now. So with the influx or with our African-American males or poor students being special ed, our needs not being met as a society, and you want to look at the human infrastructure that we have to develop, that is something that I really feel that we will have to look at in the very near future.
Is it easier to take a contentious issue and make it a study committee as opposed to legislation, which could get bottled up and end up in the trash can?
The reason why we have our study committees is so that, as you said earlier, so everyone will come together, look at it, bring in people from all over the place, all over the country, the experts, talk about the issues, ask the questions, come up with some proposed legislation at the end of the session, at the study committee, and then vote on it. If it comes out unanimous, it kind of gives the blessing of the study committee, it goes to the House, it goes to the Senate, and it kind of sails on through. That's traditionally the way it's happened. Now, I had something dealing with school counselors. It came out, legislation did a good job, and it came out pretty much unanimous, but it still didn't go anywhere because they still didn't want it to happen. We've done something with absenteeism and graduation rate. We've had a problem with that, so I think this year we may wind up doing something with absenteeism and the graduation rate. So the bottom line is that you said yes, this is an avenue which is inclusive to develop legislation for the state of Indiana.
Is it also because there's a lot of confusion as to what the data is on special education? In other words, how many kids? What's the demographics? Is it something where maybe you know, a sentence can be put in the budget bill. Every school district must put on their website their special education statistics by January 1st.
Can I give you
that sense to slip in the budget bill somewhere?
Well, the budget bill is going to be very big, and when it comes to the education part, there's maybe something we can look at. But really, sincerely, we need to look at it from a practical standpoint of a special ed. Who are the students that we're affecting? What's going to happen with our students? And really have some real hardcore numbers. And that's very hard to say because some school districts don't want to say they have special education students. Charters say they do, but they wind up giving them back to IPS.
Is it also that we need to look at how the money's being spent to make sure we assume all 300 school corporations in Indiana are running honorable programs, but to make sure that nobody's taking special ed money and using it to buy supplies for the basketball coach?
You're talking about 349 school corporations, including the charters, pretty much. That is something that we can't look at.
The reason I say that is look at the problems that audit found with the money that was found, the $300 million found under the mattress. The problems that they found there. And so is it time for an audit of special ed just to see and make sure that all 350 of those school corporations are operating palms up and honorably?
Well, when they found the money, $300 million, and they coming back and found a half a billion dollars, we asked for audit 18 months ago. Then finally now we do have an audit. Maybe we'll just have to find some more money somewhere, and then maybe we'll get an audit again. We just need to go ahead and just look at special ed, look at the students, look at the outcomes that we really want because we have to do that. We need to fund special ed at a level. We always talk about money following the child, and money should follow the children.
One final thing, IPS won a court decision at the local level that they ought to get some $6 million back. The Attorney General is talking about appealing, which is his right under the Constitution, but it's also the suit was filed, by, the appeal was on behalf, the plaintiff, or the defendant, I'm sorry, was an independent state agency run by a constitutional officer. Shouldn't that constitutional officer decide whether they want to appeal or not?
Exactly. Give the money back. It's $6 million, give it back. That's all it is to it. Just give the money back to IPS, the second largest school district in the state of Indiana, so they can continue to do what they need to do. We cannot continue to have layoff teachers, have increased class sizes, and not address the opportunity and achievement gap in education.
With Greg Porter, he's going to help write the budget as the minority Democrat on the House Ways and Means Committee. He also sits on the Budget Committee, and you're the ones that's getting to see those projected. We're collecting a little bit more money. In December,
it's December 17th, we come up with another $2 billion surplus. That's 2 years in a row that we had a $2 billion surplus.
You know Mike going to want some of that money back now.
Well, we don't care. Give the money back. Restore $300 million for our education that was taken away. Restore the $100 million to the Division of Child Services.
You say if any's left over, if he wants to cut, he can have some of it.
Restore the money that was taken away from our students and our children.
Greg Porter, appreciate it. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more. We're live from the legislature. It's After News with Amos on a Tuesday.